is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Germany in the Ukraine conflict. I welcome Ryan Bridges, writing for Geopolitical Futures, where he is an analyst, a subscription site I recommend. Observing Germany now at the 10-month going into the new calendar year of the war in Europe. Germany is the largest economy. It's looked to as a leader in the EU and one of the leaders in NATO. However, at this time, there's reason to assess how Germany's doing, especially because of the now famous Zeitenwende speech made by Chancellor Scholz right after the beginning of the conflict in late February. Ryan, a very good evening to you. Zeitenwende. Let us do some fundamentals. What does it mean in German, and what did Chancellor Scholz mean it to represent at that time? Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. Also, congratulations on that pronunciation. That was very good. I know a lot of English speakers have struggled with it. In his initial Zeitenwende speech, which was, what, 2 or 3 days after the war started, he said kind of the most basic things that you would expect, that Germany was going to support Ukraine, you know, give them weapons, which they did. And that was a very big deal in Germany. And compared to pre-war when they were offering 5,000 helmets, it was a dramatic step for Germany. But of course, I think it was sort of the minimum expectation that NATO, that Germany's NATO allies would have for their response. And they talked about overcoming their dependence on Russian energy and on modernizing the Bundeswehr and the way that they were going to, the German military. And the way that they were going to do that was with a $100 billion special fund. And it wasn't very specific about, what they were going to use the fund for, but it was rearming and creating a cutting edge capable fighting force. And as the war has gone on, it's become clear that, you know, of course, there were a lot of constraints. There were a lot of difficulties that they were going to have to overcome. There's a reason that they had these dependencies on the U.S. for security, on Russia for energy. And it was going to be hard to overcome. And I think that they have exceeded most of the expectations that I've seen in terms of the energy security. But on the modernization of the military, it's been very sluggish and there's been a lot of backsliding like you would have expected.
Two pieces then, energy security and national security. Let us begin with energy because it's the far more compelling story going forward. When and if there is an end to the kinetic warfare in Ukraine, there will still be the puzzle of where does the energy come from, what source, what does this mean for climate change, what about the pledges at COP26 and COP27, energy security. You talk about the quick turnaround of the German economy to natural gas. What have they done? What have they achieved quickly? And what does it mean for their energy needs?
Yeah, well, so before the war, Germany's plan, they did have a strategy, and I really wanted to put this in there, called Energiewende, which was like the energy revolution that goes back a long way. And that was a shift to renewables. And they were, of course, going to get rid of nuclear power after Fukushima. And of course, the Germans are always skeptical of nuclear power. So the idea was that natural gas was going to be their transition fuel. And of course, it was going to come from Russia. And Russia's idea, which Eastern Europe was very clear about and picked up on, but the Germans and I guess the Italians and some of Western Europe disagreed with, was the idea that Russia was building specific lines to bypass Ukraine and countries that they might want to invade later, effectively, to give themselves more leverage, to retain that leverage over Germany, but without having those transit countries have any influence. And so Germany, this whole time, people have been telling them, including Donald Trump, to build liquefied natural gas terminals. They have, of course, you know, us in the North Sea, in the Baltic. And they proposed a couple of projects when Angela Merkel was the chancellor, but they never followed through and they canceled them. And so in just 10 months' time, they were able to get their first floating LNG terminal up. And considering all of the challenges, including the fact that the minister in charge is from the Green Party, who understandably is not a big fan of doubling down on the dependence on natural gas, was able to get everything through and get it past the environmental groups, which have been protesting and all sorts of things. And it's been very impressive. And at this point, they're going to have, I believe, three terminals. They may actually already have opened the second one, open within the next month, I believe. And that's going to replace somewhere around a third of the gas that they got from Russia. And then by the end of next year, they should have two more, which at that point, they're more than half of the gas that they got from Russia. They'll be able to bring in from LNG terminals. And of course, there's other countries also increasing LNG capacity. So they will no longer be so reliant on Russian piped gas and can be importing LNG from the United States, the Middle East, and, you know, other places around the world.
Very impressive, building it this quickly. Are these temporary structures the way, say, during the Second World War, they put up whole barracks buildings on the Mall in Washington with the understanding that they'll come down when the war is won? Of course, they didn't come down for several decades, but they did come down eventually. So are these LNG terminals to go away once the war is solved, or is this a reordering of their understanding of their energy needs?
Yeah, my understanding is the floating terminals they're renting, and I don't know what the length of those contracts is. I imagine it's probably pretty several years. I want to say that two of the terminals are permanent. I think it may be the two that they planned to do, you know, a few years ago are going to be permanent. But there's also some quite a bit of speculation among energy analysts that they're overbuilding the LNG terminals, which makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, if I were in that case, I think that would be the appropriate response, to go a little bit overboard considering the level of threat that they're facing. But I would imagine that as, you know, I mean, we can get to this later, I guess, but as the war starts to resolve itself, however it is, that energy is going to be on the table, on the negotiating table.
Yes, let's look at energy needs in Germany and throughout the European Union. Natural gas is a transition fuel, or is a recommended fuel to reduce the greenhouse gases. But my reading of the news is they've maintained three of their nuclear power plants and also reawakened coal-fired electricity plants and also started importing coal again. Are those seen as emergency procedures that will go away?
Yes. The coal, definitely. I don't know what the timeline is on that. The nuclear power plants are currently scheduled to phase out, I believe, in April. And one of the political parties, there's three parties in the coalition. There's Scholz's party, which is the largest. There's the Green Party, which controls the environment ministry. So I believe that they have the kind of final say over the extension of the nuclear power plants. That's Robert Habeck. And then there's the kind of business-friendly liberal party, the Free Democrats. And they have been the Free Democrats have been the most outspoken about extending those, the life of those nuclear power plants. But just given the dynamics, they're the smallest party in the coalition. And this has been a very tough year for them, as well as the Greens. I guess you could say for all three of those parties, all of them have had to kind of betray foundational principles, right, that, you know, behind their party. So there's talk of extending the life of those nuclear plants, but it doesn't at the moment look like it has much of a chance of happening.
My understanding of the weather, the climate in Europe right now, is that it's unusually warm. There are no ski slopes to be seen in the Alps. It is balmy to spring-like in southern France. In other words, it's an unusual weather system that may or may not hold. However, your reporting, and I've seen this consistent elsewhere, is the Germans prepared by filling up their natural gas storage bins beforehand. And so because of the warmer weather and because they're practicing conservation, they have plenty to get through this winter. It's the winter of 24 and the winter of 25 that are the question. What is the German answer so far? Because you're reporting a shortfall now. We can only assume that the good weather is not going to hold.
Right. And the important thing, I guess, is that the longer the weather stays warm, or there's two really important parts, I think. One is that, of course, no one expects for them to get as lucky as they have been in temperatures going forward. But they are supposed to be, you know, typically they would be drawing down their storage tanks right now. But over the last few days, since I wrote the piece, they have actually replenished their storage by 3 percentage points. They're at 91%, which is, I'm not sure, but I would assume at least 12 percentage points above what it usually is, looking at the five-year average. So their storage tanks are in good shape. But of course, if they were completely reliant on the storage, I think the expectation is that it would only last about 2 months during the winter. So at any rate, they should be fine for this year, unless something completely catastrophic happened. Gas consumption is way down. The last number, I think, was about 24%, which again has to do with that weather. So the second element of it is that they are, I don't know that by the time they get all five of their floating LNG terminals set up, which will be around the end of 2023, they, depending on the storage situation, depending on the weather, you know, depending on, there's not very high expectations of a lot of increase in production around the world, but there, you know, there will be a little bit. And of course, the biggest benefit that one of the things that I think gets overlooked is that Europe is really only going to be in competition with Asian buyers for this gas. And the countries that are really going to suffer are the emerging markets and the ones that don't have big pocketbooks like the Germans have to outbid everyone, which is why this European Union price cap proposal is such a big deal. But it's a separate issue. And so I think that the expectation is, even in the worst case scenario, by probably mid-2024, I think Russia's gas leverage will be effectively gone.
That is a great success so far. So let us turn to the other part of Zeitenwende, which is national security. I'm speaking with Ryan Bridges. He is an analyst at Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site. We're looking at Germany because that is the star of the European Union and the mighty financial energy engine going forward after Ukraine conflict to build to rebuild Ukraine and also to return Europe to prosperity. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.